Conscious Leaders Tribe, a warm welcome to another exciting show today. We have got the most extraordinary woman to vibe and shine with today, Melani Van Rooy. You see, we've had her, when was it?
Oh, many moons ago. It was probably 6 years ago.
Was it 6 years
ago? Yeah,
yeah. We did this.
We spoke about data.
Data and analytics, yes. And it was such a success. Yeah. We did it with the University of Johannesburg.
Correct.
Then we had an event that happened at UJ where we all spoke. And then I heard your story. And I've always in the back of my mind, I was like, one day I'm going to talk to you about this thing about that you do. So just to give a little bit of context to our audience. So Melani Van Rooy is actually a doctor. So we have to cap the moment here. But more importantly, a data specialist. She's, you know, there's nothing she can't touch, but she heads up the marketing for one of the biggest retailers in Africa. You know, Clicks, who she's working with, is phenomenal at what they do. But I've also admired the way how you have found a way to collaborate with your customers.
Correct.
And I've been preaching that for years, but I've never seen it implemented successfully. And I really want to unpack that with you today.
Cool.
And then we're going to get a little bit like into a little bit more deeper things. But I think I would like to start off. I don't want to rehash what's happened, you know, with Tresemme and put the context, but there was a diversity issue. And what happened was you got employed to come and fix this challenge. I think maybe pick it up from there
absolutely.
And take me through it.
So you can just imagine Carmen taking over. So I took over the marketing team in April of 2021, and this whole incident happened in September. So by the time I got there, the marketing team was completely decimated, right? A lot of people had to leave, did leave. So you can imagine walking in and finding all these despondent, don't eat me, kids. And my biggest task was really to reposition Clicks as a brand, especially in the mind of women. Because remember, we're a 75% female audience, right? That's our customer. And a lot of them were really pissed off at us. Let's be honest. And we, as a brand, we took a big hit. And the first 6 months after the incident was really to fix what was wrong fundamentally, right? So processes were put in place, etc. So there was a lot of background PRing. But when I got there, it was then time to come out of the shell, right? And to say, how do we take this forward? So one of the things that happened, we had a wonderful, wonderful asset, a marketing asset called Conversations. So Conversations was amazing, but we lost it. We lost the right to talk about hair, as an example. And we were the go-to place for hair. So the challenge was, how do we get people back? How do we pull them back? And one of the things that we realized very quickly is take them on the journey with you, right? And so collaboration started with our customers. So let me explain the tool that we have. So we've got it's very fondly called the Clicks Alida base. And Alida is just because that's the tool that we use. And we've got 60,000 customers on there that talk to us literally on a daily basis. And we can ask them anything, right? Do you like Carmen's purple hair or not? anything from that to, you know, we saw you purchase product X, tell us more. So we collaborate with them through that platform. Look, we also do some focus groups. I'm not a very big fan of a focus group. I don't like it when you pull people into a room, five people, give them a bit of cook and tea. You know, I don't like that. I'd like to ask a broad audience. So we established two things after Tresemme. One was internal, was the advertising advisory committee, which sits to this day every afternoon at 3 o'clock, consists of a multi-disciplinary team of people right across from HR marketing that scour every piece of marketing material that goes out. But I'm talking everything, social media, television, you name it, is scoured to see, are we using the right imagery? Are we being diverse, etc.? So that was a wonderful internal process. But then what we thought is, why don't we use these 60,000 people and take them on a journey with us? I'll give you two or three examples. One is we work with them on campaigns. So a recent campaign where we collaborated was, we saw that sexual wellness was a very big thing abroad. So every December, some of my executives go overseas. They see what's going on there. What are the trends? And for a couple of years, they came back and said, Mel, sexual wellness and talking about sexual wellness is a big thing. Not about the how-tos, but the you know, solutions for your problems. And being in South Africa with our diverse culture, not all cultures talk about it in the same way and want to talk about it in the same way. And so we wanted to come up with a concept called Let's Talk About It, where you talk about everything from the big M, menopause, that you and I speak about often, right through to men and what issues are with men, et cetera, et cetera. And so we crafted this, and we were all gung-ho about it. And then I went, but wait a minute, right? Let's just hear what our customers. So then what we do is we go back to our customers, and we say, this is what we want to do, guys. Here's what we want to do. We put it in front of them. We said, everything from, we showed them the creative. This is what we want it to look like. This is the strap line. This is the positioning. I mean, we even asked them questions like, there's a big Sexpo in Cape Town. I later found out there's a difference between the Sexpo and the Sex Expo. Listeners, beware.
What is the difference?
Are one is smutty and the other one is not. As simple as that. Okay. I landed up at the wrong one. It was not good. I won't say which one. Any case, but we were contacted by them and said, look, we understand you're looking into this. Don't you want to be an exhibitor? Because we are, you know, the biggest seller of sex toys in South Africa. Note.
What?
We are the biggest seller of morning after pills in South Africa. So obviously, Clicks is the go-to place. And they wanted us to have a presence at the Sexpo or Sex Expo, whichever one it was, you know, to educate customers. So we asked our customers, co-create this campaign with us. And they said, hell no. Hell no, we don't want you there. Why don't you want us there? Because actually, you're a family retailer. We actually won't feel comfortable to have you there. So we would have gone there, and that would not have been the right thing. So it's co-creating campaigns. So I'll tell you, we showed them probably about 20 images for our opening, you know, our big logo. And eventually we ended up with the one that our customers asked. You see, and that's the thing about co-creation is you can lip service it. Carmen, you can lip service it. You can say, oh, Carmen, tell me what you think. And then I go, I mean, Nico's not going to listen to what you said.
Mm.
We literally changed creative and a strap line based on what our customers said. We didn't go to the expo at all. Two things like packaging design. So I don't know if you know this, but private label is a very big thing in Clicks. About 35% of everything that we sell is private label. And let me tell you, do me a favor the next time you're in a Clicks and just see how many Clicks logos you see on Clicks products. You're going to be blown away.
Yeah, especially in the medicine department.
Everywhere. Mm. So all of that packaging is designed by my team. Guess what we do?
Mm-mm.
We co-create that with our customers. When we're unsure about should we call this, because we also have to think of the name of the product, we bounce names off them, we bounce colors off them, we bounce designs off them. So it really has been co-creating from, so look, mostly co-creation with customers happens in the product development space on the FMCG side. And we found this way on the marketing side to take them with us with things like that. And we've been super successful. And I'll end off my spiel on this and say, we then, after all of that and all the brand building and all the love that we created, you know what? We went back and we created Beauty Playground after the conversations. And let me tell you, Clicks Curls became conversations, became Beauty Playground. A heads up, there's a big one coming in November in Joburg. I am going to get you tickets because
Yay.
It is the go-to event of the year. You will not believe what you see. 6,000 females, beautifully dressed, just doing all things beauty. So we've slowly earned back the right to talk about beauty. And today, we are the industry leader in beauty by far. If you look at the Nielsen stats on beauty market share, Clicks leads by far. So that's how we co-create with our customers. And even on pricing strategies, you know, things like do you want 3 for 2 or do you like 30% off? And they told us, for instance, let me give an example, please don't do buy one and get the second one for half price. That's too difficult for me to understand. And guess what? We dropped that pricing mechanism. So it's even to that level. And that's where your customers feel you're taking them on the journey with you.
Yeah.
So obviously we asked them a lot about beauty because that's where we hurt most. But the halo effect on the rest of the business was magnificent as a result as well. So yeah, it's a fun space to be in.
I mean, like just listening, I'm actually getting goosebumps because, you know, there's nothing more empowering when you actually listen to your customers, yeah, and they can see that you're actually acting on their voice.
Exactly.
And through that, you are actually seeing the innovations, exactly, happening. And I think, exactly, that is just absolutely incredible.
You know, I think where retailers have gone wrong in the past is they think you've got the red, yellow, and green smiley faces at the till.
Yeah.
You got customer feedback.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a difference between customer feedback in terms of service, mm, and really involving the customer in what you put in the snake queue,
mm,
you know, or the sin queue of sin, Satan's aisle, whatever you want to call it. But we ask them about that. Do you want us to take sweets away? No, actually, we don't want you to take sweets away. You know, that type of stuff. Do you want us to put lip balms there? So it's all of that. And then, of course, you do ask them, what was your experience in the store? What can... And mm, we've put in amazing... So there's amazing tech. There's amazing tech. We've put in literally a world-class piece of tech that caters for our 60,000 Rand Alida panel. Rand, look at me, where my mind... 60,000 strong Alida panel where they can give feedback, up to where you are in store, and you can scan a code and say, look, I don't think, you know, your fridges are full enough, or your pharmacist was great, or your pharmacist was rude, or the queue was too long. And that's all on one platform, which also includes all your Google reviews, what they're saying to you on Google. So it's not social listening more than it is just gathering feedback from wherever, whether they call the call center, whether they go on Google reviews, or whether they scan a QR code in store, or whether they're on the Alida panel. Customers want to have their voices heard, and then they want to see change, mm, happening.
Mm.
Don't keep on saying, I don't like your app, we don't like your app, we don't like your app, and then you don't change the app, right? Mm. And the same with all of these others. So it's been an exciting journey, and sure, let me tell you, now my problem is to contain it, because now now that everybody in our head office has gone, ooh, this is cool, now they want to know everything. And I said, guys, we also can't make these people tired, give them a break, you know. So it's been a hell of a journey.
I absolutely love that. I think from my perspective, I think what a joy it must be, mm, to be able to say, here's our website,
mm,
because the website's always, mm, the window into the, yeah, business, yeah, how do we fix this,
exactly,
thing. But I think also understanding the various touch points of your communication, exactly, and how they interact. I mean, just to go back to mm, this event of yours, I remember you talked about having a little area,
yeah,
for the ladies.
Yeah.
And just by observing, yeah, what was happening, yeah, there, yeah, is what catapulted this into something extraordinary.
Absolutely. And we've now added the males.
Oh, have you?
So, absolutely. So, we listened to our males as well, saying, well, why are you doing all of this for females? What about us? Because remember, in COVID, males all of a sudden discovered the facial, you know, because their wives had to practice on somebody. So, we came up with a concept called Bro Nation. So, Bro Nation is about grooming, about male wellness, and about male mental wellness.
Oh.
And I can't tell you. So now at Beauty Playground, we've got a whole area for men where we groom them, where they can play games, what? Which is, I mean, it's just super exciting. And when I start talking about my customers, I can't stop.
But I mean, are they comfortable like with each other doing this?
100%. In fact, we can't get them out of
there. Oh, really?
Yeah. So we had a whiskey place there and the whole thing, and they were manicured and pedicured. But also, there was a space for them to talk about, I'm a single dad. What are the challenges of being a single dad? Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I sat and I listened to some of these stories and I was like blown away with the issues that men had to deal with, because, you know, you look from the outside and so, yeah, it's about the grooming as well, but it's about, you know, what do we want to talk to? What is that safe space where I can? So we've got a lot of men's events now where we only invite men. We call it the men's conference, because I don't know if you know this, but men have this thing that they call the men's conference. There isn't a conference. It's a way to get away from home. It's like a hall pass.
Oh.
So we call ours the real men's conference.
I love that. I didn't know,
yeah,
that at all.
Yeah, yeah. But so, I mean, that's also, oh, by just being attuned to what your customers, you know, come in at the end of the day. You know, how does a brand grow?
Mm.
A brand grows through brand love. Because the four P's of marketing, they're still there, but they're not the only factor. Because quite frankly, we can all match price. We now go onto the internet and you can quickly compare.
Yes.
You can take a scanner, you can scan a product in store A and know exactly what retailer B charges for it. I mean, so price, place, all of those things, product, it's all become sort of murky, right? But the love that a customer has for your brand cannot be replaced. That's why you will take something from a shelf in a Woolies without looking at the price. because you just love it so much, right? And that to me has been my core thing, is to rebuild the love for the Clicks brand. I mean, it's been with us for over 50 years, right? Mm. It's gone through menopause, by the way. It's done. It's now going on to Seniors Club. But it's really when people see that unicorn, that blue unicorn, that they know when I walk in here, I can trust what I'm getting there. I'm getting great value, but I'm trusting what they're giving, whether it's advice or a product or a price. It's a trusted thing. And that was something that I said when I leave, I won't leave. I'm retiring out of Clicks. I'm never leaving. I love my job. But when I finish, that's the legacy that I want to leave, is that we built that brand love. And we can see it in the Kantar brand love scores coming through, which I'm really proud of.
Oh, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's music to my soul. And it's almost like they have become the orchestra.
Exactly.
And you're the conductor. Exactly. And they're all playing along. And you've exactly. turned your back to all of the noise that usually goes on, especially within the culture. Mm. You know, everybody makes all these huge assumptions. And I'm wondering, how did this all impact this massive shift? How did it all impact the culture and how the rest of the business gets excited?
You know what? That to me has been magnificent to see. Look, before me, the MD, the current MD of Clicks Retailers, he started 3 months before me. He came from our wholesaler side. You know, we also have a female running the business in total, the Clicks Group. And the culture change as a result of this brand love, right, has been immense. You can see it filtering down the way our merch team is choosing product. I mean, you and I were talking about ethical products, right? And how we think about our customers. And how it's not just, oh, I got this great deal from a manufacturer A, let's just slap it on our customer. Because for a long time, retailer was, I will tell you what you want, yes. right? Yes. Now it's a question of, listen, I can vote wherever I want to with my wallet. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me what I want. I'll tell you. And if you're not listening to what I want, then I'm just going to move and I'm just going to shift my, because it's become so easy. I mean, with online retailing, the divide between retailers has just disappeared because I can very easily switch. The switching is not, I have to now drive 3 kilometers further. No, actually, I can just pick up my iPhone. I'm there, right? So now there's very different choices that customers have to make. And as a business, look, it also takes time, but there's this ethos that we are driving in Clicks. It's called building a healthier future.
Oh, I love it.
Right? BHF.
Oh my
and
gosh.
we are getting everybody around it. So it's got 4 pillars. It's building a healthier life. So it's all about wellness. Because if you say health, you know, it's quite confined. People think health is pharmacy. Right? Mm. We talk about wellness because, by the way, if I drink collagen for beauty from within, it's also wellness, right? Mm. So it's a cross. So we look at how can you build a healthier life, getting better habits, et cetera, driving that ethos. Building a healthier planet by looking at the products that we source, right? Mm. By looking at our solar installations at our head office and at all of our stores, et cetera, et cetera. It's building a healthier economy. Right? How do we take hands with South African-born companies? And we have had some amazing success stories. That's a podcast on its own, right? About how we've taken females that have literally started products in their garage that are today businesswomen of note, right?
Wow.
And really working. So it was life, it was planet, it was economy, and a healthier community. Right? How can we make a difference in the communities that we are? You know, it's easy to write a check, Carmen. It's very easy to write a check. It's much more difficult to do this behind the scenes, not hang it on the big clocks. Oh, look at what we did. But just to go into our communities and make a difference. You know, when the riots hit, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, it was devastating for us. 45 of our stores were wiped. They could not trade. And none of those staff members lost their jobs. None. Not a single person. For all the months that we revamped, we made sure that they had other jobs. Because beyond that person lies at least 8 family members that need to. You know, those type of things is where we do it and you don't go big hoo-ha TV campaign. And I think the company is... And I mean, it's an evolving process. It's a dynamic process, not something that you begin and finish. But to give an idea, when I open my computer screen in the morning, it talks about building a healthier future and really It's not just about the rands and the say, of course, we're not an NGO, right? We have to make money.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's also the difference that you make. And I think that's the difference that we make. You know, when you're in a small town and you know the only place where you're going to find somebody that help to help you with a medical issue is the nurse at the Clicks Clinic. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing.
And it's also a beautiful case study of shared value. And how shared value should actually be implemented, because it doesn't just go on. It has to go into the communities.
Exactly.
It's so vital. And they need to feel that they are taken care of and you know, they can. Oh, no, it's absolutely amazing. Then I just want to tap onto this ethical beauty conversation. You know, it's. I was doing research for a client of mine the other day, and I was just like, wow, this ESG, I know it's trending, but it's exploding.
Yes.
And the challenges behind it is immense. Mm. Even the reporting part, I mean, what needs to happen in the business, but also the demand and supply chain, that, you know, the value chain. I just want to understand from you, what is the complexities around ethical beauty?
Yeah. Look, because let me tell you, customers are extremely switched on. Make no mistake. They might not know the ESG terminology if you just ask them, you know, here. But they're very aware of what they're putting into their bodies, what they use in their homes, what they expose their children to. And, of course, Dr. Google tells them a lot. The complexities are, you know, it's not that easy. It's not, especially in the beauty scene. So, obviously, we've got a range of products that give you all the free-froms. The free from paraben, the free from this, the vegan ones, the sulfate-free ones. But A, those products are more expensive because you can imagine they're not produced at scale the way that you would produce the rest of it. What we find, and to me it's a little bit of a personal bugbear, I'll be honest with you, Carmen, is that a lot of consumers talk ethical, but they don't necessarily walk the talk, right? Let me give you some examples. So you know that we own the Body Shop. And the Body Shop is absolutely built on all things ethical. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Body Shop. I use their products. I really love it. All the packaging, by the way, is recycled packaging. All of it. Everything that you buy in there is recycled material. So we've got a big recycling station in a lot of our stores where you can literally buy, let's say for your body wash, you can buy the canister and then you bring it back when it's empty and we fill it.
Wow.
Do you know that's dying? We can't get customers to buy into that. So I'm going,
sure.
You're a beauty shop, you're a body shop customer, and yet here I give you a solution, and you're not using the solution. We had a case where we reformulated a lot of the body butters. And you know, when you reformulate, the one thing that makes a product non-ethical is the lacquer rake. Whatever makes it smell so nice, right? Unfortunately, that's the bad stuff. So you take it out and you reformulate it so that it's completely clean. And people go, oh no man, bring back my body. Why? It's not smelling so nice anymore. So there's a little bit of consumer education that I think that is missing. You know, so those same customers, and I mean, we've got a massive data analytics team. You can imagine with my background what that looks like.
Oh yes.
And what I often see is I would find customers that would shout about, you know, why do you have plastic bags in your pharmacy still? That will very happily buy plastic products in our home section. Then I go, well, lady, maybe pull it through. So for me, the complexity is, A, is that consumers don't necessarily understand that it is more expensive. Unfortunately, it takes more R&D. It is a more expensive. And until we get to scale, unfortunately, you will have to pay a bit more. But we offer that choice. It is there. But B, consumers also need to be educated on what it really means. If you want to stand for being ethical, what does it mean to me as a customer? Now, I often ponder with my team around this. Is that our role? Is it our role to educate? And I often say to them, look, it can't take over my marketing, but surely we have to talk about it. Right. Surely we have to talk about what are the practices that we are putting in place to mitigate. Can we ever get rid of plastic ever in our lives? If you look around this room.
It's even in our bodies as we say.
Yeah, what I'm saying.
Sorry.
But for me, it's important that we give customers choice. We've got some beautiful ranges. I mean, we've got a range called My Earth, and it's free from everything. But if you're going to wash your hair with it, it's not going to have the bubbles. So I'm going to have the bubbles because bubbles are bad, right? So so there's beautiful products. We take it very seriously. And ESG principles across our business are being applied, right, based on the Building a Healthier Future. That's really where it's coming to life. But yeah, those are the complexities. I mean, you spoke about reporting and measurement and all of that. It's a whole new discipline.
I think the one thing that I, and this is what's so beautiful for me about what you're doing with the customers, because the other side of the coin, when we talk ESG with clients and stuff, and the conversations that's coming up, is the silo departments can no longer exist because my reporting is affected, but everybody does in the value chain. Exactly. And from the customer to the supplier. So you can't alleviate that. And I think the press also sometimes, I'm always very cautious of press releases and how to interrogate them because a lot of it is fluff. Like I always say to my clients, don't get swallowed up in the tsunami of trends because within that trend is a little signal, just maybe one or two signals. And I think that a lot of people don't dive deep enough into a trend before they do the implementation. Exactly. And I mean, just listening to what you're saying is it's because everybody's talking about ethical beauty, but nobody's talking what's happening behind the scenes. I mean, just another example, cybersecurity. We all know it's a big threat. But the thing is, nobody report when they report their issues and you know, cyber risk or when something happened, they don't make it public. So nobody knows about it. So nobody knows how severe cybersecurity it is.
And I'm very happy to say that the regulator is growing a pair.
I mean,
we are seeing that. Right. So we got audited recently. We had a breach, which was very publicly put forward, because why not talk about it?
Yeah,
I mean, surely if Clicks can talk about a data breach, right? And a lot of us had the same breach. It was an international breach. The development bank, I mean, everybody was hit by it, and they came through. Jeez, I mean, it was a massive audit. I thought I knew a lot about cybersecurity. Hell no, you don't know what you don't know. So it does seem to me that there's a heightened awareness and there's some fines that are being handed out. Because, I mean, just to give an idea on ESG, and you and I spoke about it before we started here, so I can't divulge all the details, but I can tell you this much. Everybody in Clicks, all of our bonuses are affected if we do not reach our ESG targets. Now, people say, yeah, but, you know, I'm a pharmacist. How can I influence solar, you know, getting to our solar target? Well, it's in our ethos. It's how we live it. And I think unless we start exposing this and exposing, because you know how many people ask, but what is this ESG thing now on my bonus? Oh. It was actually a very great educational moment to go. But, you know, remember those beautiful posters we have up on Building a Healthier Future? This is where it comes to life. So I think companies must just put the big old panties on, but the regulator is fining you if you don't publish it now. Hey,
but this is very much this is wonderful news.
No, but like big,
really?
Yeah, there was a recent case in South Africa where a company was given a month to come forward and get their stuff. The 20 million rand fine if they didn't. So that's tangible.
Yeah, this is the things that you need that's to tangible. See. You know, when I was doing my postgraduate, we were in an innovations cohort, and we were given the tools to go and look and see how many breaches happened on our email addresses. I was shocked, and I saw how many were not reported.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know how that impacts trust. Now, you know how easy it is for anybody to go and check, especially if, as you say, when cyber risks are at play, you are more aware. Like, it's fascinating for me to listen to this. But I mean, there's so much to talk about, but I feel like we're running out of time. But I want to, on the localization of products, I really want to have a separate conversation. Yeah. I have an idea I would like to take off air. But the next thing that I wanted to just ask you is, you know, as a mom, you're such a wonderful mother and a grandmother. You're a grandmother of twins.
I am indeed.
And, you know, when I look at the love and care and absolute pride you have for your children. It's the most beautiful thing to see, and it warms up my heart. And, you know, just to see it through other people, sometimes it brings you so much joy and hope. And I just wanted to find out, like, you know, what keeps you up at night, you know, in the times that we live in.
Yeah. So my kids are adults. My son turned 35 yesterday. Jeez, I felt old yesterday. But any case. And I've got a beautiful daughter of 32. So they're adults. So I don't have as much that keeps me awake at night, because I'll tell you why. I raised them to be responsible young people. Have they made mistakes? Absolutely. There are now other level things, like spirituality.
Yes.
You know, like, I'm seeing them moving in a direction, and that keeps me up at night, where I think about how will that display out in their lives. So it's more those more esoterical type of things. Like, for instance, I'm not worried, for instance, a bit about the type of parent that my son is, because he's an amazing dad. But I think about those things, you know. My kids live abroad, so my son and his wife and the twins are in the US. You know, It's a tough space to be in, common. Yeah. You know, it's a tough space to be in. But yeah, I think the ethos that we have as a family, is just being good. And I can see them living it. But it's things like, will my daughter also leave South Africa? Will she also decide, you know, that there are greener fields elsewhere? I think that's the issue. How will I navigate, for instance, being a grandma of grandchildren in South Africa one day and kids in the US? How do you get to that point? So it's interesting how you're staying awake at night moves from, oh my God, are they drinking and partying, to, you know, are they spiritual? Have they got spiritual habits, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it is, you know, it's about the opportunities that they will have. My daughter's just starting up her own business at this ripe age of 32. And I, you know, in my mind, you know, I have you got your business plan ready? And it's to keep that distance, to say, let her grow.
Yeah.
Let her grow, let her fall, be there when you know. So it's a beautiful space to be in. But I say, when you're a parent, it's a you know, buckle up.
Yeah, definitely.
My mom always used to say, small children, small problems or issues. Big children, big problems and issues. But I'm very blessed. I really am extremely blessed.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. But I mean, I sense that this collaborative heart that you bring to the business world, you also bring to the family world, right? What advice can you give to us?
I mean, so in my family, I'm the kingpin. So we're five brothers and sisters. I've got an amazing female family, right? Lots of strong females. My brothers are strong men, right? But we're like all best friends. We're like all in each other's lives. And my kid is your kid, is our kid, right? I mean, I've just gone through a process with my sister's son, right? Where it was so wonderful for me to be able to step in and help there with capabilities that I had and a capacity at that point to help. So the advice is, family is the only thing that nobody can take away from you. Nobody can take. Friends will leave, colleagues will move on, but your family is at the core of who you are. And honestly, what I see common is people with strong family bonds and relationships, they carry that into business. They're better leaders. They're more switched on. You know, I'm an empath for my sin and also not for my sin. But I can see how me looking at my team, I've got 220 people working for me, how viewing them as one big family, right? I'm taking the principle. So my family is like my where I hone my skill and I take it to. But yeah, for some reason, and I'm the fourth child, I just landed up being that person. So I'm like the matriarch, which is a mantle that I have. But now I say, okay, where am I going to take this mantle? Who's going to be next? But yeah, it's great. You know, you just need to be grounded, common. You can't be pulled in seven directions, because life will happen. You know, there's one thing that life has taught me is life happens. And bad things happen to good people as well.
Yeah.
And it's 100%. How you take your support system, how you take your spirituality, and how you build that to help you through these tough times.
Yeah.
You know, I was standing and doing a strat session last week, and in my personal life, something was happening.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at that iPhone and you wonder, is that message coming through? But now you also have to be super professional. That's where you pull all that strength from, because I knew I had this massive family behind me and they're just going to be there when I walk out of that session and I go, oh, I just want to cry now. They'll be there and they'll understand.
I love that. I think also, as much as I agree with you, I also think from my perspective, I also think that there's also some people that don't have good family structures, but also learning from that.
Exactly.
They can also bring so much wisdom from and those learnings.
But family also has different
dynamics.
I mean, my son and his wife don't have family in the US, but their friends are unbelievable. They formed a family.
Oh, I love that. So with Conscious Leaders, the other day, we had a medium to come and talk and talk to our audience. We had so many ladies, and it was an intimate space. It was a webinar environment, very interactive. You know, the healing that happened in that room. Women were so vulnerable in front of each other, and they were dealing with a lot of pain and hurt of their families. And I think when I was watching that, I was just going, you would never say when you meet these people, what they're going through. And it's just because it was coming through a different channel.
So let me tell you, my entire leadership style is based on inspirational leadership. And one book that had such an impact on my life was a book by Patrick Lencioni called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Hmm.
And the first thing he said that goes wrong is trust. There's a lack of trust. And if you then trace back, it's because of people not being vulnerable or not being allowed to be vulnerable. When I, you know, the one thing that I just believe in so much is to understand, I don't want to pry into your private life. But if I understand and you're vulnerable, if I can be vulnerable with you and you're vulnerable with me, and we walk apart then from a professional point of view, the way I'm going to react to you, the way I'm going to judge or not judge what you are saying, it's just completely different. And I feel that this mask that we put on, not just at work, but we tend to put on these masks. I'm so strong.
Yeah.
I'm so able.
Thank you.
I'm not saying break down at every meeting and pull your hair out, right? But I do feel that vulnerability is a commodity that is just underutilized. And I have seen men in these sessions that we had with Patrick, which I thought were like rocks, just break down about things that I went, I did not know this, but geez, now I understand so much more. And when I hear this and I hear that people can come to a safe space and just be vulnerable. I mean, I've got two leaders above me who allow me that vulnerability. You know, and I always say there's a very close, you know, I'm not talking about being hysterical or over emotional. That's not what people think. When you're vulnerable, you are going to be all emotional. That's not true, right? But geez, it makes my life so much easier as a leader. And because I'm vulnerable, my team goes, okay, I don't have to be 100% perfect. And funny enough, they give you more than what they would have ever given you.
You see, this is the thing that, you know, I feel I need to really work hard with this community. Is one of the things that I keep on saying is I feel that we as women need to come to a place where we can become soft again.
Yeah.
Because I feel that because it's a need of mine as well, but I feel this world has become so resilient and so fighting about physical stuff, but our mental well-being and our the things that's meant for us and love.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're a teenager, you're so scared to say that word, I love you. But it's a word that we need to practice in everything that we do.
Absolutely.
And I think the big thing why I started this community is I want authenticity to be a way of self-love.
You know, Carmen, when somebody asked me, what am I going to do when I retire? And I said, I have an absolute passion, and I will develop it over the next 4 years and hone it to talk about female leadership. Because let me tell you, I think as females, we do ourselves a big disservice. So I've been the victim of severe female corporate bullying. I'm talking to a point where it stole my soul, you know? And I never want any other woman to go through it. I was exceptionally strong, so I could get through it. But let me tell you, it almost broke me. Mm. I cannot imagine my daughter at her age having to go through that. But there, for some reason, we think we have to look like men, act like men, not show this, not show. And I'm not talking about giggling and all that stuff, but I had a speech once at a Women's Day, and I said, why women have to wear lipstick? Because to me, let me tell you, we are four of the eight members of our exec at Clicks, females, right? We absolutely bring a different dynamic to the boardroom. Just as a black person and a white person will bring a different dynamic, males and females. So you and I have been blessed with certain levels of intuition, certain levels of empathy, the softness, the love, whatever. And if we can't bring that to a boardroom, then where do we take that?
Yeah.
Then what it means is, and that's what I've seen with a lot of female leaders, right? They're great at home. They get in the car. They go all aggro. And you know what happens? More than it should. They become bitches. And then, I don't want to work for a female. They're bitches. And I'm going, no. That is not what I want us to be known for. Oh, she's probably going through menopause. Yeah. Or she's that time of the month. You know, it upsets me greatly.
Yeah.
And I just think that I've seen the best of it and I've seen the worst of it. And I really think as a female cohort of leaders, we really also need to look inwards and say, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I doing with this gift that I've been given? I rule my team. I always say I've got an iron fist in a velvet glove. I can be tough. When I need to make a tough decision, I can make it. Because it doesn't mean if we bring that side of us that we're not tough leaders. I can be tough, but I don't have to be a bitch to be tough, quite frankly.
You see, that is exactly it. You know, I was having a conversation the other day, and you know, I find a lot of women, and I don't know if there's something wrong with me because I've done research and I've seen the research. And when women are not around or where they're in a corporate environment, you know, they start talking. Mm. And, you know, you and I, we get people to, we're like magnets. Mm. Like people just come to us and tell us their stories. There is a very much a generational gatekeeping thing that's happening for the younger generation. Mm. I've made it up to here. Mm. You can't come with me. You have to land yourself and do that. Mm. Or you would see a lot of tear down syndrome.
Let's and just pull each other down.
Yeah. And this is also why I started Conscious Leaders, because I feel like it's time for us to unite. In front of every revolution that we've seen in the world, there was always a woman in front of it. Mm. So why can't we as women come together? Mm. And I say this, and it might be offensive for some, but I do feel that this community is a safe space where we can rehabilitate and become women again.
Exactly. Agreed. Agreed.
Oh, you know,
my absolute passion point. I'm going to do lots of
this. I'm going to call you in.
I'm going to be a TikToker. I'm going to be internationally known.
You can, and you must, and you should. You know what? I'm so grateful that you've come over my life, and just to know you, and just to engage with you, and to have conversations with you. And, you know, every time when I reach out to you and I have a question, or I drop a piece of information to you, you're always so warm and welcoming. And
thanks,
I love you so much.
Thanks,
and I'm so grateful for this opportunity.
Ditto. Absolutely.
Oh, I want to cry again. This is a menopause today.
The big M.
The big M. Oh, my gosh. But thank you so much. Keep vibing and shining.
I shall indeed. Thank you so much.
I can't wait to share this, because this conversation needs to be happening all the time.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And we want to see
thanks
all
for
the
this
work.
Opportunity.
Absolutely.
Always happy to share.
Oh, thank you. Right, everybody, that's it for today. I just want to say, wow. Profound insights, and it's so lovely to have those validations and to learn that, you know, we're on the right path, and together we can do so much more. So open that door and open your heart and do something great today. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.